The Kinder Morgan event is not your first anti-fossil fuel poetry expedition.
No,
reading
<probably not>.
Wordsworth in the Tar Sands is a poem in the book that comes from a previous adventure. Can you talk about the experience?
Yeah. So, you know, I was already curious about where pipelines exist and living in a place that is a port through which oil and coal flow. And so for a while I'd wanted to go up the other end, follow the pipeline up and go to its source in northern Alberta and see what it's like there. And you were certainly hearing all these horror stories about what it's like up there. So I saw that this group of First Nations people up there organized what they call Tar Sands Healing Walk every year. And they invite people to, you know, apply to come and you go and join the walk. So I did. And so in 2014, I went up there in June. There's a few hundred people. You camp on the indigenous land on the side of a lake. They get a bunch of school buses and drive you up to where the tar sands are and through an access road. And you go in there and walk around the circumference of one single decommissioned tailings pond, a site to essentially just to store poisoned water. And it's massive. The circumference was 14 miles was the circumference. And it's literally just a sea of sand in this northern, what's a very damp, boggy forest, you know, where rivers and streams wind all the place and there's moose and all this kind of stuff. They've literally just removed everything. And it's literally a sea of sand, which I assume they truck sand in to maybe absorb the, I don't know what it is, but because it's this white blinding sand as far as you can see. Crazy. So you spend a whole day walking. And you walk at the speed of the elders. You walk quite slowly. And they stop at the four compass points and hold prayer and ceremony and that sort of thing. Incredibly powerful experience. Just because to experience the scale of the place is mind-boggling. Literally, the air kind of smells like you're sitting in the gas station or something like that. It just smells like gas in the air all the time. And it's just gross. It's really horrible.
And how does Wordsworth come in?
Yeah, well, I knew from photographs that that's a pretty stark kind of landscape, a very alien-looking moonscape. And I thought, you know, how would Wordsworth or any other poet that comes out of that landscape tradition, as they used to refer to it. So Wordsworth, when he started writing his poems, he was already accessing a very old tradition. You know, throughout the century leading up to Wordsworth, the most popular kind of poetry was what they called landscape poetry. You know, where the poet was out on a walk and described a particular location in a very painterly way for you, right? And so Wordsworth picked up on that tradition, and there's a lot of Wordsworth's poems are walks and descriptions. He takes it more in a meditative direction, of course, meditating on the relationships between human beings and the rest of the world. So I thought, well, how would Wordsworth account for that kind of a space, or any poet like that? He was just the focal point for it. So I went there with that in mind. So I literally did take a copy of Wordsworth and read it while I was there and tried to think through what if you had to walk in that landscape and describe and celebrate it. not quite appropriate, but I kind of love that bring these two things that don't quite fit together, right? How do you throw the romantic landscape poet into a landscape like that, which is not human, it's not organic, it's not animal, it's not anything.
It's a reflection of the imagination of people who would live like this.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
That's their dream.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I had in mind that I love in Wordsworth, and I think it's often gets forgotten in sort of cartoon versions of Wordsworth, easy versions of Wordsworth, is that he was not celebrating some sort of pristine sense of nature. The nature he was used to was the Lake District, where human beings have been living and farming it exhaustively for millennia. There was not a scrap that was not in some kind of use. But the biggest part of the use of that land was as common sheep herding land. So it was a very open territory, few fences and walls and hedges, and sheep are left to roam wherever they want. They still do today. It's still common sheep herding there. The shepherds just let their sheep wander all through the national park and go gather them up once in a while. So it was a working environment. It was an environment in which Wordsworth could see and experience and meditate about natural beauty. At the same time, it was a space in which human beings were going about the process of economics, of making a living. Mm-hmm. So it's a bunch more integrated, human beings and natural world, I think, in mm-hmm. Wordsworth, and he's often given credit for.
Mm-hmm. If they had stuck with their Christian tradition, every 7 years, the land would have to go fallow. They probably don't do that. Yeah. But even in the Christian tradition, which we vilify when we're taking the side of indigenous people, there are provisions to take care of the land in such a way that every 7 years it gets a break. And that doesn't happen.
Well, this is the thing. I think if you go back in time in Europe and actually look at how people lived on the land, this is what Berger was, I think, on about. People in Europe, they lived obviously differently than indigenous people, but they lived by a similar rule, which was you had to inhabit land in a sustainable way because you were completely dependent on it and you weren't going anywhere. You were there in that one valley and your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great going back had been in that same damn valley. Guess what? You're going to be pretty careful about how you treat land.
Don't fuck it up.
Exactly. Which indigenous people have always known. Right. But Europeans have largely forgot about this the last couple hundred years. And that's one of the huge effects of capitalism, is that it completely altered your average Europeans and therefore North American, us, you know, American and Canadian settler peoples. It completely altered our relationship to the land. We were no longer in an intimate relation and therefore a necessarily sustainable relationship with it. But Wordsworth still lives in that world. He really did. And was very aware of that.